And a very good Monday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. Glad you are with us as it is the Monday after the National Football League draft. The Jacksonville Jaguars drafted 9 players in total, including 3 from LSU. A lot of offensive linemen, defensive linemen, the lines of scrimmage, certainly. A couple of cornerbacks mixed in there. Obviously, the wide receiver in Brian Thomas. A kicker is added. It's always good when you can add a kicker in round 6, particularly a kicker that beat the Gators in the last minutes of the game in Gainesville. And Cam Little, the young man from Arkansas, who might be my favorite kicker already since Josh Scobie. He's in the running just for the confidence that young man has at only 20 years of age. So I'll give you all my thoughts on the draft. Your thoughts are welcome on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010. Guest lineup looks great tonight. It'll look great all week. A lot of reaction to the draft. We'll kick it off tonight with my buddy Ryan Roberts of Rise and Draft, the letter N, riseanddraft.com. Ryan's been one of my draft guys for years. Here on Hacker After Dark, he will join us coming up in a little less than 20 minutes to give his perspective on Brian Thomas, on Mason Smith, on Jerrion Jones, and everybody that the Jaguars drafted. Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union towards the top of the 9 o'clock hour to talk some Jaguars, talk a little Jarvis Landry as well. That was an interesting story that came out earlier today, as apparently the veteran wide receiver who's been out of football for since 2022 is going to participate in Jaguar rookie minicamp. What does that mean, if anything? Well, we'll certainly talk about it. And towards the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, we will go out to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Mike Scarborough, he's covered LSU for years, tigerbait.com. That is one of the websites to go to for LSU athletics. And we'll talk about Brian Thomas. We'll talk about Mason Smith. We'll talk about Jordan Jefferson as Jacksonville, Florida basically became Baton Rouge, Louisiana East this draft as 3 LSU Tigers are on their way here to Duval County. So we're absolutely loaded. We're with you till 10 o'clock. We will keep you updated on NBA playoff action and NHL playoff action as these first round series are beginning to wind down. In the NHL, the Battle of Florida, Panthers lead the Lightning 3-1. Game 5 tonight, they're scoreless in the first period. And in the NBA, the Celtics lead the Heat 2-1, and they lead Game 4 tonight 34-22 at the end of the first quarter. So score updates coming up, but obviously it's going to be all Jaguars all night. As every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do give you a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
All right. After just days and weeks and months of the blood, the sweat, and the tears of being with you every night here on Hacker After Dark and breaking down these prospects and talking mock drafts at an endless rate. Denmark, I sympathized with you towards the end, not only here on Hacker After Dark, but on Jaguars Today. I imagine you had to hear hundreds of mock draft proclamations over the last few months. The draft process is what it is. I'm happy it's in our rearview mirror, and I'm happy now we can respond to the things that we saw the Jaguars do. And what did the Jaguars do? Well, I think the Jaguars did a lot of good work. First and foremost, let me say this. Did I agree with everything the Jaguars did? No. But Trent Baalke, say what you will about him, he is a man of his word in certain regards. The end of the year press conference that Trent Baalke held, remember that was like 3 weeks after the season ended, not the pre-draft luncheon, but the end of the year press conference. Everybody at that point was asking about Josh Allen's extension. Everybody at that point was asking about Calvin Ridley's future. Those were the two pressing topics. But what did Balky say in that press conference? He said, we got to get bigger, physical, and more tough on the line of scrimmage, both on the offensive line and defensive line. You know, I said during the year last year, when a team shows you who they are, believe them. And the Jaguars showed us that they were not ready for the primetime spotlight towards the end of the year. Kind of the same token when it comes to NFL general managers, particularly here in Jacksonville with Trent Baalke. When Baalke gives you that sort of statement at an end-of-the-year press conference, from now on, you need to believe him. Because what he said, we need to get bigger, physical, tougher on the line of scrimmage, they did this offseason. It started with re-signing Ezra Cleveland. It started with bringing in Mitch Morse from Buffalo. It started with bringing in Eric Armstead from San Francisco, bringing in Trevis Gibson from Tennessee. That's four guys right there. And then in the draft, you add 310-pound Mason Smith. You add 320-pound Jordan Jefferson. You add 320-pound Javon Foster of Missouri. And in the seventh round, 285-pound Miles Cole from Texas Tech. The Jaguars added seven, or with Cole, potentially eight guys on the line of scrimmage, offense and defense, that will make this roster. Eight guys. You wanted to beef up the line of scrimmage. You wanted to get more physical. You wanted to get tougher. I think you accomplished that. Look, we talked about Brian Thomas on Friday when we were here with you with head coach Dave Campo. I like the Brian Thomas pick. Brian Thomas, along with Gabe Davis, along with Christian Kirk, I personally believe you should keep Zay Jones. You go Zay Jones, Brian Thomas, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis. You go four deep at wide receiver. That's a top 10 four deep wide receiver unit in the NFL, in my opinion. Show me a lot of teams that have four better receivers than that on their roster. I don't think it exists. But Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson, and Foster, the offensive tackle from Missouri. Man, I like those picks a lot. What happened? Why did you lose to the Tennessee Titans in Week 18? Because they pushed you around on offense and defense. Why did you lose to teams like Cincinnati, Baltimore, Cleveland? Because you got pushed around. I don't know if you're going to get pushed around this year. You've got some dudes, man. You've got some beef on that offensive line, on that defensive line. I like it. I like it a lot. Now, cornerback, they did not address in round one. They chose the wide receiver. I'm fine with that. They did not address in round two. They took the big defensive tackle, Mason Smith. I'm fine with that. They did address it in round three with Jerrion Jones. And I got to tell you, Jones is a guy that I had my eye on in a couple of mock drafts I did. I had him going in round four, not in round three, but I'm okay with it. If you were worried that somebody was going to come up and get him in those 16 or 17 picks before your third round pick and your fourth round pick, I'm totally fine with taking Jones. He improved his stock at the East-West Shrine Game. He did a lot of good things at the Combine. And look, I think he's a guy that you are going to see play this year. You now add him to Tyson Campbell and to Ronald Darby and to Darnell Savage. You also drafted DeAndre Prince out of Ole Miss. And by all indications, Prince might have gone underdrafted a little bit. Many thought he might go in round four. The Jaguars got him in round five. Add competition to the likes of Monteric Brown and Gregory Jr., Eric Howitt, and the other youngsters in the secondary. I'm totally good with that. You had that kicker in round six, Cam Little. Look, I remember him beating Florida. I remember him beating LSU his freshman year and then dancing on LSU's home field. You want to talk about a kid that doesn't lack for confidence? That's the Jaguars' new kicker. Watching his Zoom call on Saturday after he got drafted, he doesn't turn 21 till August. He's the youngest kicker ever drafted in the NFL draft. The kid's got a lot of confidence. And then Keelan Robinson from Texas is a return man, right? We'll see what happens. But with this new return game, with the fact that the kickoff return is somewhat back in the National Football League, you're going to have to find guys to do that. He will be able to do that. Devin Duvernay, they brought in from Baltimore, will be able to do that. Look, I know the Jaguar draft is getting panned by a lot of people. I've seen a lot of C-minus, C-plus grades. I think I've seen a lot of, you know, rankings 1 to 32 has the Jaguars 25 or 26. And a big part of that is, well, Mason Smith was considered the 72nd best prospect, and the Jaguars took him at 48. Jerrion Jones was considered the 135th best prospect, and the Jaguars took him at 96. Considered that by who, right? If these are the Jaguar guys, I'm fine. One big glaring difference between this year's draft class and last year's, they didn't draft for luxury this year. They drafted for need. These guys are going to play. Brian Thomas is going to play. Mason Smith is going to play. Jerrion Jones is going to play. Jordan Jefferson is going to play. All right? I mean, Britton Strange last year was a backup. You knew that going in. Tank Bigsby was a backup. You knew that going in. You knew all their guys were backups with the exception of Anton Harrison. That's not the case this year. Brian Thomas will start. Mason Smith may not, quote, start, but he's going to play a lot. Jerrion Jones may not, quote, start, but he's going to play a lot. A lot of these rookies are going to get on the field very, very quickly. The Jaguars overhauled this roster. Absolutely overhauled it. You take into account roughly the 10 free agents they signed. You could take into account this 9-person draft class, most of which, to me, are locks to make the roster. Of the 53 guys that are going to be around after training camp, 16, 17 are going to be brand new. That's basically a 33% change on the roster. A third of your roster. It will be different in August than it was when the season ended in January. Is that a good thing? I don't know. I think there's ways to read into it. I'll tell you this. After the collapse last year, after losing 5 out of 6 and ending the year at 9-8 and missing the playoffs, I'm happy there's a little bit of roster turnover. The Jaguars knew it wasn't good enough last year. They could not run it back again like they did after the 22 season. They had to make some adjustments, and they did. And they brought in, again, about a third of the roster will be brand new if you include rookies and free agents. There's a lot to get into as far as veterans I'd like to see him bring in. There's a lot to get into as far as the roster as a whole. I saw Hayes Carline on 1010XL.com put up his 53-man roster, his April version of that, which I enjoyed reading. We'll do that as we get closer to camp. But the bottom line is this. Trent Baalke told us at the end of the season, bigger, physical, more tough on the offensive and defensive lines. Arik Armstead, Mitch Morse, Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson, re-sign Ezra Cleveland, Foster, the tackle from Missouri, Cole, the defensive end from Texas Tech, Travis Gibson. They addressed the offensive line and the defensive line in a big, big way. They lose Calvin Ridley. Well, what do? You go get Brian Thomas, and now all of a sudden, Brian Thomas, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, and as of right now, Zay Jones? It's pretty good, right? Jaguars had a good offseason. Did they have a great offseason? No. But they had a good one. This is a much better football team right now than it was when the season ended on January 7th. And I don't even think you could really argue that. And all you can ask of a football team going into the offseason is to improve from where they were when the season ended to where they will be when the next season begins. The Jaguars have done that. On paper, this is a better football team than it was on January 7th. And, of course, on paper is all we can go on right now for the next couple of months. 641-1010 on the phone line and on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Your thoughts, welcome. Dylan Denmark, I trust you had a good weekend, and we've been so caught up in the draft and things that are going on. I looked on my calendar today. High school spring football over Northeast Florida. Boy, that got here quick.
Yeah, I'm still in the middle of track season, so I'm not really in full mode in football. But, yeah, we'll have spring games here in about, 3 weeks, because we have 15 practices, and then you play a spring game. So it's right here, man.
It's crazy. Look, it's that time of year. Draft is in the rearview mirror. Rookie minicamp. By the way, Jarvis Landry to rookie minicamp for the Jags for basically a tryout. Five-time Pro Bowler Jarvis Landry. Look, I hope the Jaguars sign him for the remainder of the offseason. You have 90 people you're bringing to camp. 90. All right? Take one of the ninth or tenth linebackers or safeties out. Sign Jarvis Landry to whatever, a league minimum, whatever he's going to command. And even if he doesn't make the 53, have that guy with Brian Thomas every day for the next 4 months. Every day. An LSU legend, an LSU young man. They obviously have the college in common. They have the wide receiver position in common. I would sign Landry just to literally be a mentor for Brian Thomas for the next 4 months. And if Landry shows you anything in OTAs and minicamp and training camp, well, then there's a conversation to be had about 4 months from now. But assuming he doesn't, I would still bring him in for 4 months to be a coach on the field for the first round pick that you just invested in. So we'll see what happens, but that certainly was interesting this morning, waking up to the news that Jarvis Landry will come in for what is the equivalent of a tryout during Jaguar rookie minicamp coming up in the next week, week and a half. Got a great guest lineup, Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union. He comes up at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up next, Ryan Roberts, Rise in Draft. If you listen to me for the last couple of years, you know he's one of my guys here on Hacker After Dark. I think Ryan does a terrific job. We're going to run him down, man. We're going to talk about all the draft picks, a guy that's covered the draft for years. What does he think? And I'll tell you this. When it comes to Mason Smith, he has a really, really interesting former NFL player comp. When I heard him say it earlier, I thought, As I started thinking about it, kind of made more sense. Ryan Roberts, RiseInDraft.com next on a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The NFL draft is now in the rearview mirror, and the question is, how did Trent Baalke and the Jaguars do? There's been some positive. There has been some negative nationally. We're going to talk about it a lot this week, and we'll kick it off tonight with Ryan Roberts. He is certainly one of our guys here on 1010XL. Rise in Draft, the letter N, RiseInDraft.com is his website. Ryan, I know you're busy, man. Thank you for taking time out. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. How's everything on your end?
Ryan, we're good. All right. So we talked about it for months. It culminated in 72 hours up in Detroit. Before we really dive in player by player, in totality, your thoughts on Trent Baalke and the Jaguars' 24 draft class?
I mean, I think they got a whole lot more athletic, if nothing else, right? I know we'll get in, obviously, into the first-round pick, which was a great selection, and we'll talk about that obviously more, but I think in totality, there were some risks, I would say, but I mean, hey, it's the NFL draft, and you have to take some risks for the reward, obviously, at the end of the day, but I think if Trent Baalke's objective this past weekend was to get a lot more athletic, I would say he certainly did that, right? And I think that we'll talk about a couple of those picks that might be a little bit more volatile than the others, but in totality, I think when you look kind of from round one all the way down to round seven, excluding the kicker, we'll talk about, right? But in totality, I think that they got longer and they got more athletic on both sides of the football, which is never a bad thing. And if the development and the coaching is up to par, I think that this draft could be a very successful one. It's just going to be about some development with a couple guys.
First and foremost, they trade back from 17 to 23. And I got to tell you, boy, they fleeced Minnesota, right? Getting a third and a fourth next year to move down six spots. I was shocked that Minnesota gave that up. What were your thoughts?
I mean, yes, I would say they definitely fleeced them. And I think that the greatest part of the whole trade back scenario, too, was I think they got the player that they probably would have taken, if not in heavy consideration, at 17, and Brian Thomas Jr. too, right? So I not only do you get the extra draft capital, but I would have been a big proponent of them taking who they took at 23 at 17. So in total, I think that that was tremendous value, right? Being able to get that guy who, you know, we'll talk about obviously, but there was a little bit of a medical red flag, or and not a super red flag, but there was a little bit of a medical concern that popped up late that maybe pushed Brian Thomas Jr. down the draft board, maybe 5 to 10 picks. But being able to get the extra draft capital and still getting him at 23, I think was one of the best picks of the draft, of the first round, in my opinion.
Ryan Roberts, RisenDraft.com. All right, so the Jaguars, yeah, they have 6 picks in the top basically 120 already next year, so something to look forward to. Let's get into Brian Thomas, 23rd overall. He now joins a wide receiver room of Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis. We'll see what the future holds now for Zay Jones here in Jacksonville. You mentioned a medical red flag, a minor medical red flag potentially. Dive into that and just your thoughts on Brian Thomas coming to Duval County.
Yeah, I think it was the day before, maybe 2 days before the draft, Dane Brugler, who does an excellent job over at The Athletic, he had kind of put out in the universe that there was just a minor durability thing with Brian Thomas that could cause him to slip down the board a little bit. Because, I mean, there was honestly some chatter about him number 9 to the Bears, you know, like a little bit earlier in this class. And they kind of said that, you know, oh, he might drop maybe more towards the late to the 20 kind of conversation, right? Maybe into the 20s. And I think it was very fortunate for Jacksonville, because again, I think there was a reality that he would have went on the board, off the board, 10 to 20, somewhere in that range, possibly 17 to Jacksonville. But that slight durability thing, I think, was causing teams to just kind of move him down slightly. But again, it wasn't like a major red flag where they're like, oh, he might move down a round, 2 rounds, 3 rounds. Like it was never in that type of conversation, but it was just merely just, you know, down the first round board a little bit. But I think that, and we talked about it, right? I think that there was a reality that at number 17, you take Brian Thomas Jr., who are the best corner on the board, whoever that is perceived to be, whether that's Quinyon Mitchell or whether that's Tyrion Arnold or whatever. But obviously they were able to move back and still get who I perceive to be the perfect fit for them. I mean, I really do, because I look at this wide receiver group that you highlighted a little bit already, and I think that there's a lot of good in that room, right? Like Christian Kirk as kind of that slot intermediate separator yak guy, he's a lot of good traits to him. You know, the Zay Jones is kind of more of a possession type receiver, but pretty solid overall, not really dynamic, but pretty dependable. And then you bring in a Gabe Davis, who is hoped to be that outside vertical separator, at least that's what the Bills wanted him to be, although he was very inconsistent with it over the last couple years. But I really think that Jacksonville needs a guy that can win outside and create big plays vertically. Because when you look at Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, when he was at his best, he had T. Higgins. He had a healthy Justin Ross. He had guys that could win outside the numbers. And he really hasn't had enough of that in Jacksonville so far. So I think for Trevor Lawrence's sake, for the ability for the Jacksonville Jaguars to be able to spread the field more consistently and really open things up, I think that Brian Thomas Jr. is exactly what they need on this offense. An outside vertical separator, long, athletic, and impact size. And I think that he is at least, as a rookie, going to be able to open the field up a little bit. Even if he doesn't end up being the high volume getter as a rookie, I think that he is going to allow guys like Christian Kirk, like Evan Engram, like Zay Jones, those types of guys in the middle of the field to be able to open things up a little bit. So I think that was a home run pick at 23.
Ryan Roberts, RisenDraft.com. Quickly, Ryan, because I want to get into the other guys. The minor medical issue, you mentioned the durability. That's nothing for Jaguar fans to be concerned about, correct?
No, to my knowledge, that is just soft tissue stuff, right? So it's nothing like a, you know, there wasn't anything structurally wrong. There wasn't anything like a long-term ailment that people are seriously concerned about. It's just the typical things, man. I think it's something with hamstrings or whatever that is, and it's kind of like a recurring issue a little bit. So anytime there's a soft tissue thing, you got to kind of just do your due diligence with it and make sure that it doesn't flare up. You know, maybe that's more more structure on, you know, the pre-practice stretching and making sure that there's maintenance from a week-to-week perspective. But long-term, if it was anything that you would have to seriously worry about, that was something that, that would push him down a round or two or maybe even more potentially. So I don't think anybody in Jacksonville land has to worry too much about it. I think it's just merely due diligence and making sure that it's not a reoccurring issue long-term.
They went back to LSU in round two with Mason Smith, and Trimbaugh's got to draft somebody with an ACL in their past. That seems to be a recurring theme with him. A gigantic human being, was an all-freshman SEC in 2021, had the injury in 22, did come back and start 12 games for LSU last year, so hopefully the injury is behind him. Your thoughts on Mason Smith in round two?
Man, he's so volatile, man. I don't even really care about the ACL as much. I know that obviously it's a conversation and it's a point of understanding. And when you're doing the draft process, it's in the conversation of like, hey, let's see what the medicals are. Let's see the long term. Let's see the short term. All those great things. But my concern is Mason Smith, the football player right now. And on the field, there are moments where he is utterly dominant. I mean, like literally you could put on the top 10 plays of Mason Smith in 2023 and you could convince yourself that he's the best interior defensive lineman in the class. The problem is that the game to game and snap to snap consistency just isn't there right now. And that could partly be because he did miss 2022 with the injury. You know, he got hurt like I think four plays in the 2022 season and missed it basically a whole year of development with the ACL tear. But I have heard, you know, and this is just speculation, right? But I have heard a little bit of chatter over, you know, his work ethic and those types of things. And I don't know the kid at all. I definitely don't know him well enough to know how focused he is, the being the best version of himself and all those cliches, right? But all I know is when you watch the film, there are just some plays where he just kind of seems to turn it off a little bit, right? So that's always a concern. Snap-to-snap consistency, does the guy want to be the best version of himself? If there's a comp out there for him, this is an unfortunate one, but I think one that makes a lot of sense right now. There's a lot of Albert Haynesworth in his game right now. And from a size, explosive perspective, because I believe, don't quote me, but I looked this up a couple days ago, Albert Haynesworth coming out was about 6'6", 320 pounds. Sounds pretty eerily similar to Mason Smith. Ran around the same as far as testing-wise. And if you remember Albert Haynesworth, hey, when Albert Haynesworth was locked in and ready to go, he was the best interior defensive lineman in the NFL, arguably. But then when he turned it off, he just kind of disappeared for long stretches. So top 50 was a little bit rich for the player that he is right now. Number 48 was a little bit rich for the player that I see from a game-to-game, snap-to-snap perspective. But that being said, if you can get the best version of Mason Smith and he is bought in, then this could end up being a steal. But this is why it's volatile. This is why it is volatile, because you do not get the best version of Mason Smith. At least you haven't from a snap-to-snap perspective so far. So we could look back on this one a couple years from now, and we could say that that was one of the bigger steals in the draft. Or we can say that he is just kind of what he has been so far. And that is a player that you can't depend on from a game to game, from a snap to snap perspective. It is a big wild card and is a big gamble by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I hope for their sake, he's locked in, he's ready to go. Because if he is, he is about as much tools as any interior defensive lineman in this class. But there is a big gamble associated with it. A
couple of more for Ryan Roberts, RisenDraft.com. The Haynesworth comparison is certainly an interesting one and one that I'm probably going to take from you, but I will give you credit this offseason. Back to LSU in round four, Ryan, and we'll get to round three in a moment. But while we're on LSU and got Mason Smith's partner on the D-line and Jordan Jefferson, and I'm going to have to say Jordan Jefferson about 100 times to make sure I don't say Justin Jefferson, but Jordan Jefferson on the D-line, what was your thought on the third LSU player coming to Jacksonville?
He's the exact opposite of what I just said on Mason Smith. Not nearly as physically gifted from an explosive perspective, but he is bull strong and he is reliable, man. Like he was, honestly, somebody asked me, I think it was on a podcast leading up to the draft, where they'd asked me about a couple defensive linemen that I feel like were underrated in this class and underappreciated. And Jordan Jefferson was one of those, because he actually started his career at West Virginia, played a lot in the West Virginia runs a lot of three-man front. And then he went to LSU and LSU this past year, at least, was kind of working between a four and a three man. Like, they had kind of been a versatile front. But Jordan Jefferson, no matter what alignment, no matter what role that he was in, he was just really, really consistent. A solid, functional athlete, but, man, he is really strong. He can hold the point of attack. I feel like this is going to be one of those players that is super just unheralded, but an important part of the team potentially moving forward, because he is a guy that, whether you need him to play some snaps as a 0-1 or you need to flex him out and do some odd man front stuff where you ask him to be a 4-4 eye, I don't think he's ever going to have the backfield production that is going to make him a star in the NFL. But I think you're going to look back at it and just be like, that guy's a good player, man. And he's going to do a lot of the little things, a lot of the dirty work, but you need those players. And honestly, double dipping with Jefferson and Smith, it makes the Smith pick a lot, for me, a lot more tolerable of that gamble, because you got a guy in the fourth round that I think is going to do the little things. He's going to do the dirty work. And you might be able to just use Mason Smith as a guy that can be a little bit more of a versatile weapon. Maybe his flashes are a little bit few and far between, but you can deal with it because you have a guy like a Jordan Jefferson that is doing those little things and giving you that little role that you need as the guy that does the dirty work and does a lot of the little things that kind of go unnoticed. So I really like the Jefferson pick, man. I think he's rock solid. I think it'll play in 2024 if you need him. And I think that he's going to be a guy that's going to be underappreciated for a long time, but a valuable member of a football team.
Final moments, Ryan Roberts, RisenDraft.com. All right, Ryan, in the time we have left, let's go rapid fire. Trent Baalke said he wanted to get bigger on both lines of scrimmage and stronger. Jefferson, yep, and Smith on the D-line. Foster, the tackle out of Missouri, on the offensive line, a three-year starter at Missouri. Your thoughts on the Jaguars' first fourth-round selection?
So Javon Foster went from seriously overrated, in my opinion, in the draft space to very underappreciated. And I think that we kind of went full circle, because fourth round, I actually think, was maybe a little bit lower than I thought he was going to go. I mean, I thought he was going to potentially be a top 100 player, you know, probably late third round type of kid, because he just brings such a solid baseline, man. Again, nothing flashy about him. He just has requisite solid everywhere. Functional athlete, good length, really good power. I think there's going to be a conversation of, is he better long-term inside at guard, or do we just want to keep him outside at right tackle because he has all the functional athleticism to play there and the length? But regardless, I think that this kid, probably not a starter in probably the next couple years, but he's going to be a player that's just a really vital swing for you. Can play right tackle, can play inside of both guard spots. One of those position flexibility guys that I think could really make himself valuable early on in his career.
Yeah, it's interesting. Walker Little scheduled to become a free agent after the 24 season. We'll see what his future holds now that Foster is in the equation. Of course, Cam Robinson and Anton Harrison also here. A couple of corners. They did not go corner early. They went corner in round three with Jarian Jones from Florida State. They also went back to corner, and I believe in round five, with De'Andre Prince of Ole Miss. Your thoughts on Prince and Jones?
Yeah, so Jarian Jones was a part of the Florida State duo that had really been big risers in this class. I believe he was at the East-West Shrine with his teammate Renardo Green. And they had both just kind of been stacking good days in this draft process. And then Jarian Jones went to the combine and tested really well as also. So I think that he's a young man that's like just – he's a scrapper, man. Like he actually doesn't play up to his athletic testing in the sense of – I think that he kind of relies more on his physicality than he does his true athleticism. But he can play in outside. I think he could also be a heck of a nickel if you needed him to. So I think he could be a little bit of a movable chess piece. Prince, on the other hand, he's long, athletic. There's developmental traits there. I think he's more a year three guy than a year one guy, though. I don't think that you're going to get a ton of him. My ideal for Prince is let's let him play special teams early on. Let's let him hone in his craft. Hopefully with great development, he might be a guy that could be a rotational piece down the road. But I wouldn't be shocked if Jones is a player that early on at least is giving you some rotational flexibility, and maybe he's even a part-time nickel early on in his career. So I think both of them are very different players, but I think a guy like Prince has a lot of developmental upside. The future, I think, could be bright with that young man, but Jarian Jones is a guy that I think could give you reps early on, and he could be a little bit of a versatile piece on the back end of the defense.
Ryan, as we wrap up, the last three picks, you mentioned the kicker, Cam Little. Boy, he was fantastic in his YouTube interview that he did with Assorted Media here in town. That kid's got a lot of confidence. He's only 20 years old, by the way. Miles Cole looks like the Jaguars maybe got a steal in round seven. I saw maybe round five projections for him, the defensive end out of Texas Tech. And they basically take a guy that I guess is going to be a kick returner from the University of Texas. What are your thoughts, if any, on the last three picks?
Yeah, so Keelan Robinson obviously is the kick returner you're talking about from Texas. Dynamite special teamer. I think we'll have a sticking point just in there. Very interesting man because he's a kid that started at Bama, ended up at Texas. If he was in a different situation, I think he would have been a really nice offensive player, man. He's got some juice. He's got some short area ability. Is there developmental upside as kind of a gadget, you know, movement-based guy out of the backfield? I think it's possible, but regardless, I think that he's going to provide special teams upside very early on in his career. I think that he brings a lot to the table. Miles Cole, true project, man. Like, that's why he fell to the seventh round. I don't think you're going to get a ton from him year one, maybe even year two. But he's a guy that hopefully you can stash in the back of a roster or you can get him to the practice squad somehow because I think that there is developmental upside there. Kid's a freaky athlete. He's really long, big body. He could do a little bit of everything too. I mean, he could work from a 5-4-4-eye at times at odd fronts. Like, he could do a little bit of everything as far as versatile. I think you could reduce him down in obvious passing situations potentially as well. Just doesn't really know what he's doing yet, man. He is much more athlete than football player right now, but taking a gamble on those athletic gifts in the seventh round, that's always something that I prioritize for teams, man. Like, if you're going to take gambles on kids late, make sure that they have some upside to them. So could he produce on special teams early on? It's possible because he's long and explosive, but regardless, I hope that he's a guy that you can get on the back end of the 53 or a practice squad because developmentally, year three, year four, you might have something there. It's just going to be about being patient with a guy like him.
And then finally, the kicker, Cam Little. Again, there's not so much you can break down with a kicker, but I will say this. He's like the youngest kicker that's ever been drafted. He's only 20 years old. He hasn't turned 21 until August, and Florida fans remember him very well. He had a game winner to beat the Gators last year.
Yeah, well, it was actually a really good specialist class. I mean, we had a punter from Iowa, Torrey Taylor, who is – probably about as good a punter as you've had come out in the last few years, but a slew of kickers. You know, there were several. I know that the Rams drafted one. I think there were like three or four total that got drafted. And Cam Little has a chance, man. I mean, obviously, there's just not enough good kickers in the NFL right now, as you can see, right? Because there was obviously a high demand for them. So hopefully he's able to come in and give some consistency to that room for the Jaguars because that's at the end of the day, that's what you really want. You know what I mean? Like it's cool to have the flashy guy, you know, the Justin Tucker, the Brandon Aubrey from Dallas that can make some crazy kicks and you're just kind of in awe a little bit. But at the end of the day, you just want consistency. If I never hear Cam Little's name again for the Jacksonville Jaguars, that's a good thing. That means that he was probably super consistent and a guy that just kind of went about his business. So you're hoping to stabilize that room a little bit, and he's certainly talented.
Hey, Ryan, absolutely terrific stuff, man. I can't thank you enough. You joined us many times leading up to the draft. You're here with us literally the first Monday after the draft. Thank you as always, my friend, and I have absolutely no doubt you've probably turned the page already to 2025, correct?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I actually ended up doing that like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was kind of done my 2024 stuff, so I'm like, might as well get a little bit of a head start. You know what I mean? So I'm sure we'll be doing this again this time next year. So thank you as always for having me. I really appreciate it.
We'll talk soon, brother. Thank you, Ryan.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. We're with you till 10 o'clock, as we are every night. 1010XL, 92.5 FM, the Monday after the National Football League draft. More thoughts on the draft coming up in one moment. NBA and NHL playoffs going on tonight. Game 4 in the National Hockey League. Check that game 5 in the National Hockey League, the Battle of Florida. The Panthers looking to eliminate the Lightning tonight. The Panthers lead the series 3-1. They lead Tampa Bay 2-1 tonight in game number 4, or in game 5, rather. I keep looking at the three wins the Panthers have. Panthers one period away and change from eliminating Tampa Bay. It would be like Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. The Lightning have had a ton of success over the Panthers. Panthers have yet to get over on the Lightning, but they're a period and change from doing just that. Again, leading the series 3-1, leading tonight 2-1. In the NBA, the Celtics are up 17 on Miami at halftime. Boston leads that series 2-1, although Boston has a little injury issue Kristaps Porzingis left the game with what's being described as a calf injury. Evaluation will happen, obviously, tonight. He did walk off the floor very, very gingerly. And whenever you talk about the calf, that leads the mind to wonder, is it a calf or is it something else? So we'll see. Obviously, Porzingis is a gigantic part of that Celtics team, but they do lead Miami 53-36, looking to take a commanding 3-1 lead in that series. Lakers and the Nuggets at 10 o'clock tonight. Lakers looking to keep their season alive. Denver leads that series 3-1. And Oklahoma City looking to sweep New Orleans tonight. The Thunder up 18-17 early on the Pelicans as they lead that series 3-0. There were certainly a lot of storylines that came out of the NFL draft. We focused a ton on Jacksonville, and we will continue to do that, obviously. Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union joins us in about 10 minutes or so. And at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, we will go out to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. One of our guys when it comes to LSU is Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. He's joined us for years to discuss LSU issues. No. Clearly the biggest gripe that anybody has about the draft was what Atlanta did at number 8. Atlanta gave Kirk Cousins $1 billion, basically. What was the actual figure? $180 million. I think 90-plus million of that was guaranteed.
I think 100 of it was.
$100 million was guaranteed. And that's a matter of, what, 6-7 weeks ago that transpired? And in 7 weeks' time, they go from guaranteeing Kirk Cousins $100 million to drafting Michael Penix number 8 overall. And apparently, they did not tell Kirk Cousins this until they were on the clock, as Kirk Cousins' agent told the Atlanta media on Thursday night / Friday morning that they had no idea until they got a phone call when the Falcons were on the clock moments away from drafting Michael Penix. That's a clown show, man. That's ridiculous. That's a joke. Look, I mean... the only thing I can think of, and I should give my buddy Drew credit for coming up with this theory, is that Atlanta already knows what their penalty is going to be for the tampering issue with Kirk Cousins. And maybe they know or they believe they're going to get docked a first-round pick next year, which is why they went ahead and took Michael Penix. But here's the issue. Michael Penix is not a guy you can just stash on the bench. He's 24 years old. 24. So what are you talking about here? Cousins is going to play 2 or 3 years, and they're going to hand the reins over to Penix? Well, okay, at that point, Penix is going to be 27. That's not going to work, man. Michael Penix is as old as Trevor Lawrence. Michael Penix, you know, he's not a 20 or 21-year-old quarterback. Why are you going to draft a 24-year-old quarterback in the top 10 when, by the way, you have no resemblance of a pass rush whatsoever? And there were a lot of good options there on defense. And then to be as smug and as candid as general manager Terry Fontenot and head coach Raheem Morris were about the whole thing, not letting Cousins know until they were on the clock, that was a bad look to me. That was not good. That was the biggest surprise of the draft. I guess that and the fact that you had over 700,000 people in attendance during the 3 days in Detroit. You know, the NFL draft isn't the Super Bowl, but Denmark, I wonder how close it's becoming to being that. I mean, do 700,000 people matriculate outside the stadium of the Super Bowl on game day? I don't know. I mean, maybe you get that many during the week at the NFL experience, but if you're a city now, I mean, obviously the Super Bowl is the end-all be-all because it's a week, but heck, the NFL draft has turned into 3 or 4 days, and over 700,000 people were there in some capacity in Detroit. And I wonder now for teams like, or cities like Jacksonville, that who knows if they're ever going to get another Super Bowl again. Odds are, like Green Bay, the draft is going there next year. They're never going to get a Super Bowl. Denmark, the draft may not be as good at the Super Bowl, but it's starting to get in the conversation, just the sheer revenue it brings in.
No, and I mean, it's one of the better things that Roger Goodell has done. I mean, they started doing this, what, about 5-6 years ago?
Maybe a little longer than that, because I think the first two were in Chicago, if memory serves. But, yeah, it hasn't been one, but probably 7 or 8 years. Yeah.
And, you know, Roger Goodell gets a lot of grief for a lot of things he does. This is one of the best things that the NFL has done. Like, every city, obviously they didn't do it during COVID. Every city they've done it, it's been amazing. Like, they went to Nashville. Nashville was, like, off the charts. Detroit, they're going to be in L.A., I think, here in a couple of years. It's been one of the better things that the NFL's done.
Oh, it's a blast. It's an absolute blast. And kudos to Roger Goodell. Say what you will about him, I like the job he's done for the most part. And like Denmark said, this draft thing is one of the main things, man. He has revolutionized the NFL draft by taking it to these various cities. More on the NFL draft coming up. We're going to be talking about it all week here on Hacker After Dark. We'll also keep you updated on the NBA playoffs. Hey, how about my Orlando Magic, man? Down 2-0, looked very bleak. They go home to Orlando and absolutely boat race Cleveland in Game 3 and Game 4, winning both games by, I believe, a combined 61 points. They have Game 5 tomorrow night in Cleveland, series tied 2-2. A lot of really good, compelling series. Dallas and the Clippers has been a lot of fun. Of course, Minnesota just swept Kevin Durant and Phoenix right out of the playoffs last night. Who would have ever thought that Durant and the Suns would be the first team eliminated from the playoffs as they were knocked out in a sweep last night by Minnesota? So we'll keep you updated on the NBA postseason, but it's all draft all the time, a lot of recap, a lot of reaction, and that continues with my buddy Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union. Let's talk Jags. Let's talk a little Jarvis Landry and potentially what's next for the Jaguar roster. Demetrius Harvey of the TU next on a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark here in the city of Jacksonville. It's 1010XL and it's 92.5 FM.
On the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar draft now in the rearview mirror, all the talk leading up to it. How did the Jaguars fare? They certainly look like they addressed some needs, including wide receiver Brian Thomas in round number one. Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union does a terrific job covering the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he's always kind enough to give us some time here on Hacker After Dark. Demetrius, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Just still recovering from the draft weekend that was.
Yeah, you were on social media like a madman. No question about that. And you were throwing out a lot of content over there at Jacksonville.com. We encourage people to go over and read some of that stuff as well. Demetrius, in totality, man, 9 draft picks in all. Your thoughts overall before we really dive in player by player?
Yeah, you know, I thought that they addressed some needs. I thought that they, you know, had a shrewd move in the first round by trading down and still getting the guy that they wanted to take at 17. You know, I really did think that this year's draft was really antithesis to last year's. I mean, last year I felt like they didn't address needs early and often like they should have. You know, I thought the second and third round picks were sort of luxury selections. And then this year, I think that they were able to nail in on some picks that were very necessary, needed, and guys who can come in and contribute right away without any question. So, yeah, I thought overall they did a solid job. You know, there's a couple question marks, of course, like there always are in every draft. But, you know, I did think I came away feeling a little bit better than I did last year.
3 LSU players. Let's begin with Brian Thomas. Your thoughts on the wide receiver at number 23?
Yeah, he was always my wide receiver 4 throughout the entire process. I think I had the Jaguars taking him in my first mock draft at pick 17. And I just thought he brought, you know, he brings so much to the table as far as his speed down the field, his athleticism, his size. They don't have a player of his caliber on the roster right now in terms of all of what he can bring. Now, you know, when he will, you know, actually get going and have that 1,000-yard receiving season that we all expect, you know, I don't know if that's going to be his rookie season, but, you know, he's a guy that definitely comes in and helps, replaces Calvin Ridley, and they did a good job with that pick.
Brian Thomas, Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk are all locks. What does Brian Thomas's arrival mean for Zay Jones?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I know everybody kind of is just expecting the Jaguars to release Zay Jones, but I don't really see a reason for them to do that. Yeah, that they would save some money, but Zay's not the type, at least from every interaction that I've had with him, to seem to be a malcontent when he's sort of saddled as, you know, wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, whatever that may become. I really do think that, you know, if they can, they're going to carry him through the season. It just makes sense to me, unless you're in a situation where you need to bring in another wide receiver and Zay's sort of the odd man out because of special teams or a lack thereof, then you know, I just don't see a reason why they wouldn't, or why they would go into the season without Zay, because he's a reliable option for Trevor Lawrence. He has the chemistry with him. He knows the system. It just makes sense to go ahead and just keep him there.
I agree. The team to me is better with Zay Jones on the roster, but I think you alluded to it. Normally, your wide receiver 4 is a special teams guy. Zay Jones is not going to play special teams, I wouldn't think. Right. So I wonder, does that factor in at all?
I think it does, and that's going to be a situation maybe near final cuts or even before, depending on what they decide to do. I think it does play a role because you do want to carry guys who are going to be active on game day. You don't want to have a Zay Jones inactive every single week carrying that money, I think. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It just depends. You know, maybe they view Zay as the wide receiver 4, you know, the next man up, and they don't think that he needs to play special teams as much. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union. In round 2, Mason Smith out of LSU. This is probably the one that's getting the most talk nationally. This guy in 2021 was an all-freshman SEC player. He then has the knee injury in 22, was not certainly himself in 23. What did you make of the Jaguars going that route in round number 2?
Yeah, I think I'm higher on this pick than pretty much everyone, you know, but it's a situation where, you know, and I covered his recruitment when he was coming out, and he was choosing between LSU and Florida. And he's just such a physical freak of nature. I mean, the guy is long, 35-inch arms. He plays with aggressiveness. He's quick. He's athletic. I mean, he has all the tools. And if you go back and you watch his 2021 tape before he got hurt in 2022, you'll see what I mean. I mean, the guy was dominant. He dominated the Gators that year. I remember watching being like, wow, they really could have used this guy. You know, so I think that it's a solid pick in the sense of you need to have a guy that's going to be able to come in behind Roy Robertson-Harris, Eric Armstead, because both of those guys are 30-plus. Both of those guys are on the downswing of their respective careers. And we know about the inconsistencies that we've seen from Roy. So, yeah, I thought that it was a solid addition. They needed something inside desperately. Last year showed that, especially down the stretch. They were giving up, you know, over 140 yards a game on the ground. So, yeah, I really think that this was a solid pick. I understand the trepidation. You know, he's sort of a boom or bust pick because, you know, in 2023 he wasn't necessarily himself. And it's just a risk that you're sitting there in the second round. You could have went a different route. You could have signed you could have drafted a cornerback. And so you just went with Smith, and I think the upside is there.
I agree with you. I'm high on that pick as well, and I'm trying not to dream too big here. But there was a guy in Nashville taken a few years back that was coming off a knee injury at defensive tackle, and people thought, wow, what are they doing taking Jeffrey Simmons? Well, that seemed to work out really well for the Tennessee Titans. Now, Mason Smith, I'm not proclaiming him to be the next Jeffrey Simmons, but you look at the size, the position, the intangibles, there are some similarities there a little bit, I think.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some similarities there. And actually, Chris Baalke went a step further ahead of you and compared him to Chris Smith or Chris Jones. And not necessarily that he's going to turn into Chris Jones, but, you know, he has that size, that athletic profile that would match a player of Chris Jones's caliber. And so, yeah, you know, his upside perhaps could be that. But, you know, obviously it's probably going to be something a little bit lower. But, you know, even if it is, that's a home run pick.
Demetrius, they went back to Baton Rouge in round 4, a third LSU Tiger in Jordan Jefferson. Probably the strongest guy in the draft from everything I've heard. Now, the guy maybe doesn't have the athleticism of Mason Smith, but the dude is strong as an ox. I mean, your thoughts on Jefferson there in round number 4?
Yeah, they went back to the Bayou and went with Jefferson. I'm not as high on him than maybe other people. I'm not sure. Yeah, he's very strong, but you know, at that point in the draft, a fourth round pick on a nose tackle, it's really tough to sell for me at least. And his production wasn't necessarily there. But to put a positive spin on it, I do think that you know they needed somebody behind Devon Hamilton. He missed 10 weeks because of that spinal abscess. He and Jefferson definitely can come in and be a solid run defender. He's a guy that can be stout in the middle of the defense, and that's all they need really. And so, you know, if that's all he is, then you know, it's going to be a solid pick and a solid addition to the roster. The only questions that I have is sort of positional value and things of that nature that are kind of boring.
Couple more for Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union. In round number four, Javon Foster, a 3-year starter at Missouri at offensive tackle. Guy's played a lot of football. He's an experienced player, right? I believe he's 24 years old. Look, I mean, Trent Baalke basically alluded to it over the weekend that he's going to be looked at as that swing tackle. So now you have he and Walker Little presumably behind Cam Robinson and Anton Harrison, at least for the 2024 season, Demetrius. Awful lot of depth at offensive tackle for the Jaguars.
Absolutely. I thought that this was an A-plus pick, honestly. I really did, because this is a guy that can come in and he doesn't have to just be a swing tackle either. He can come in next year, 2025, and be that starting either left or right tackle. I really feel that strongly about it. And it's a smart pick. It makes sense. You know, Cam Robinson is about to be a free agent next year. Walker Little is in the same boat. And I actually think that this might have some implications about Cam. I mean, you can go into the season with Walker Little as your left tackle, Anton Harrison as your right tackle, and then Javon Foster as your swing tackle. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to release Cam or trade him or anything like that. But, you know, I'm just looking ahead, and I really do feel strongly that this guy can come in and be that swing tackle, that next man up. And if you really feel strongly about Walker Little, if you're the Jaguars, if you actually feel like he was a solid pick in the second round in 2021, then I think you go into the season with Walker Little as your left tackle.
They had a chance to take Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold at 17, chose not to do that. They still had a chance to take Terrion Arnold at 23. They chose not to do that. What they did do is Jerrion Jones out of Florida State, Deontre Prince out of Ole Miss in rounds 3 and rounds 5, respectfully. Those that cover the draft, that do it every day, seem to like those two guys, but maybe they overdrafted Jones a tad. What's your thought on the corners they brought in?
I absolutely love Jarian Jones. I think that that was a fine pick. It's fine where it's at, and there's nothing more to say about that, in my opinion, in terms of the value. I think that this guy is going to be able to come in and instantly be a starting nickel. I don't necessarily consider him an outside cornerback. You know, I know Trent alluded to that. He said that he can play inside or outside. I think that his tape on the outside, you know, showed a lot to be desired, but his tape on the inside from this year when he made the switch was incredible. I thought that that is exactly where he should be because of the physicality he has, the tenacity he has, and then the speed. He's a 4.39 runner, I believe. It just made sense, you know, at that point in the draft. Yeah, you can argue perhaps they could have went with someone else, the Oregon corner who's super long, plays outside. But, you know, to me, it never really made sense for them to say, you know, Darnell Savage, Antonio Johnson in the slot and sort of playing back and forth with that. So just go ahead, get Jarian Jones, have him, you know, sort of saddled in there. And then, yeah, to go back into the fifth round and pick up Deontre Prince, who they brought in for a top 30 visit, I thought that was smart. He's a good player. He can come in right away and sort of be that, you know, maybe fourth cornerback on the roster, you know, steps in if Ronald Darby goes down. You know, he's going to have to beat out a couple guys, obviously, Buster Brown, you know, Gregory Jr., Christian Braswell, Eric Hallett, guys that were drafted over the last couple of years. But I really do feel like Deontre Prince, he probably went a little bit later than he expected. I know that, but also than I expected maybe. You know, I thought maybe he would be there in the fifth round, but perhaps taken earlier. So I thought those were two really good picks by Trent Baalke.
Trent Baalke will draft some special teams players. There is absolutely no doubt about that. Robinson, the returner from Texas, although he looks like he does have potentially some offensive playmaking ability. And then Little, the kicker from Arkansas. What an interesting interview you guys did with him on Zoom over the weekend. You want to talk about a kid that's not lacking confidence. That's Cam Little. For a 20-year-old, that guy seems like he likes what he does, and he's fired up for the opportunity.
I was ready to name him the number one kicker in the NFL after that interview, man. He was electric. That he has all the confidence in the world, and I think that you need that for a kicker. You can't be timid. You can't be, oh, I don't know if I can make that 55-yarder. No, you have to be like, I can make that easily. And I think that Cam Little has that tenacity. He entered the draft early, you know, taking a chance, and he's a guy that is the youngest kicker ever drafted, one of the youngest players in NFL history ever drafted. So that's special too. And yeah, Trent Baalke loves his special teams guys, but I think that this draft did lend itself a little bit more because the depth wasn't there. So Keelan Robinson in the fifth round, you know, it's a pick that I wouldn't have necessarily made, but I understand it. It's not like I don't get the logic. You're going to have two kick returners back there, Devin Duvernay, and then obviously Keelan, or maybe even De'Ernest Johnson, or whoever else they would want to play there. Maybe it's a Parker Washington. You know, maybe that's what the spot they're going to be battling for. And so, you know, I thought it was a fine pick, a change of pace back potentially, you know, didn't have production in college because he was behind all these other NFL players basically. So yeah, it was a fine pick, but you know, I wouldn't necessarily made it, but the Cam Little one was more than fine. And I think that it's electric that they brought him in just because of his, you know, his demeanor, his confidence.
Final moments with Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union. Finally, in round seven, if there's ever a Trent Baalke seventh round pick, Miles Cole may be it. He's got all the measurables. He looks like he's going to be a developmental prospect, but there is no doubt he is an enormous human being on that defensive line.
Absolutely. He's a freak of nature. He's exactly what Trent Baalke looks for if he's only going to look for traits. I think he graded out as like the eighth, you know, highest at his position in terms of RAS. So, you know, it's going to be a situation that, that, you know, he's going to develop. He's maybe even a practice squad player this year. But, you know, if you can get anything out of a player like that in round seven, then that's a plus. And I really do think that his potential clearly is through the roof. It's just going to be about, you know, will he actually develop?
Demetrius, as we wrap up, interesting news that came out with Jarvis Landry apparently going to participate in Jaguar rookie minicamp. It could be nothing, it could be something, but certainly an eye-opener when we saw that.
Yeah, it was interesting. I wouldn't have expected it. You know, Jarvis Landry hadn't heard that name in a while, honestly. He didn't play last year. He played for the Saints in 2022. Obviously before that, the Browns and the Dolphins. And so, you know, he's definitely beyond his prime. You know, when he played for the Saints, he didn't really look the same. Over the last couple of years with the Browns, didn't really look the same, but you know, maybe a year off, he can bring something. And yeah, you know, I think it's a situation where the Jaguars are going to just see what he can bring. And if they feel like he's a guy that they can probably carry throughout the season, then I don't blame them. You know, he's definitely a veteran, reliable target for Trevor Lawrence, and perhaps, you know, if they do move on from Zay Jones, perhaps a guy like Jarvis Landry makes sense as that depth player.
Demetrius, final question, talking to Jaguar fans tonight, what would you tell them? Should they be happy? Should they be upset? They're getting kind of railed nationally by the Mason Smith pick and some other people. I think they graded out like 25, 26 on a lot of these websites. What's your message to Jaguar fans about this draft class?
You know, I would just tell them it's a solid class, and you just have to let it play out. I think that they address needs. To me, it's really important for you to draft players that can actually come in and contribute. Now, I know that other teams that are further along, maybe the Chiefs, you know, Super Bowl caliber teams, maybe they're not necessarily drafting just for this next year and beyond, but you know, the Jaguars are in a position where they need to go ahead and get good players in here. The free agency classes that they signed over the last few years are getting older and leaving. You know, they have to go ahead and address key positions, and I think that that's what they did in this draft. Now, whether or not you actually like the players that they put in those positions, that's up to you. But if you're talking about process, you know, I'll go ahead and say it. The Falcons process was horrible. The Jaguars process was good. And that's really what I view it on. That's what I graded on early. I haven't seen these guys in pads. I haven't even seen them in a Jaguars jersey. So I'm not going to go ahead and say, you know, it's an F grade or it's an A grade. I don't know. I just know that the process, I liked it.
Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union. We encourage all you to head on over to Jacksonville.com. Demetrius and everybody over there at the TU had a ton of content this past weekend, and go check it out. Demetrius, I know you're busy, man. Thank you as always, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
NBA playoffs tonight. Celtics up 86-68 on Miami. That's in game four, Eastern Conference first round. Boston looking to take a 3-1 series lead, and they will, barring an enormous collapse with 8 minutes to go. Thunder looking for the sweep of New Orleans. That game is tied at 35, 4 minutes to go in the second. Of course, Lakers and the Nuggets at 10 o'clock. Lakers looking to keep their season alive. They trail that series 3-1. And in the Battle of Florida in the National Hockey League, Florida looking to end the Lightning season tonight. Florida up 2-1 in game five, 9 minutes to go in the third period. Coming up next, let's go out to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. My buddy Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. Jacksonville took not one, not two, but three LSU Tigers in the draft. Brian Thomas, Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson. Let's talk to a guy that's covered LSU for years about all three. Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, the LSU website when it comes to LSU athletics, is next. Hacker After Dark on a Monday evening here in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're glad you're with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. With the first round pick in the draft, the Jaguars went out to the Baton Rouge area and got Brian Thomas out of LSU. The wide receiver was drafted 23rd overall. Let's talk about Brian Thomas's time out there at LSU and what he will bring to the table now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. For that, Mike Scarborough has covered LSU for years, TigerBait.com, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Mike, it's been a while, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I really think the Jags got a really good one.
Yeah, look, and not only did they get a good one, I agree with you, they got to trade back and they still got their guy, accumulated some extra draft picks as well. Let's dive into Brian Thomas. I mean, the type of player he was out there in Baton Rouge, and you have a unique perspective because you've been covering him ever since his high school days.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was a guy that LSU offered early, and I don't know if they talked about it much leading up to the draft, but the year he came out of high school in Louisiana, he was also the state's best basketball player. And so when you would talk to Will Wade, who was the basketball coach at the time, and why isn't there more Louisiana kids getting offers and so forth, or where are the Louisiana basketball players? He'd say, well, it seems like every time there is one in the last handful of years, they end up being, you know, football players as well. And I think he could have been a really strong college basketball player. But look, when you see the production that he had at LSU, it's, you know, of course, leading the nation in touchdowns, and a junior year that had close to 1,200 yards and just always steady. You know, I think coming out of high school, my only question mark with Brian was, you know, could he be fiery? Because he's so shy and quiet. And he was always a guy also that you had to, you know, almost beg to get him to do interviews, and to watch him over the years come out of his shell is been something else. He's a super kid from a super family. And, of course, Walker is basically two exits on the interstate from Baton Rouge outside of town. And I think he's a fabulous kid you know, third team All-American. And when we look at LSU over the last couple of decades, LSU always seems to have a couple of strong wide receivers on particular teams. And whether it was Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham or Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, and we just saw Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. And I have a feeling both those two guys are going to be like the other four that I mentioned. They're going to have great NFL careers.
Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville, talking about Brian Thomas. Yeah, I had Chad Mahaffey, the head coach of his high school program on earlier, and he just raved about the young man. Back into Brian Thomas. Look, Mike, we see the speed, right? 4.33 in the 40. You mentioned basketball. He's a big kid, 6'2", almost 6'3". So he looks the part, certainly. How would you describe his game? For Jaguar fans listening tonight that maybe know of him because they're SEC fans, but they didn't watch him every day like you did, what type of player are they getting with Brian Thomas?
Well, you know, when you hear him say, asking who does he model his game after, and he says Julio Jones, he says he doesn't, but it used to be Julio Jones. You know, it makes sense because his game is he's big and physical, and you're not going to get him, you're not going to push him around. 50-50 balls, you're probably in trouble, especially if the quarterback is confident enough to throw it up and let the receiver go out and get it, because he can jump as a basketball player, runs great routes, and devastating on the deep ball, and he's not afraid to go across the middle. I think your quarterback there is gonna have I think he fits perfect. I really do.
It certainly appears to be a very good fit. Of course, Trevor Lawrence and the offense, it's already here. Gabe Davis, Evan Engram, Christian Kirk, Travis Etienne, another Louisiana kid, just to name a few. Mike, you know, we talk about character here. That's a big deal when it comes to the Jaguars, the type of character they bring into this locker room, because there was a time here in Jacksonville where maybe it wasn't the best character in that locker room. So Trent Baalke, the GM, Doug Peterson, the head coach, that really is an emphasis for them. You mentioned it earlier, but just elaborate, if you would, the type of young man that Brian Thomas is and what he will bring to the table here in Jacksonville.
Well, you know, it's one of these deals where you think back and it's like never, ever in any kind of trouble, no disciplinary issues, no being in the coaching staff's doghouse, none of that. He's a consummate teammate. You know, I think he's while he's not very vocal, I think he's one of those silent team leaders. He leads by example. I think you're getting a model teammate. There's going to be no issues with him.
Final moments, Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. One of the interesting things, and you and I were speaking briefly about this off air, I've seen some, you know, reports when they're grading the drafts on all these various websites that if the, quote, medicals check out, it could be a home run pick. You've covered this kid as closely as anybody for the last 6 years. Did that catch you out of left field? What medicals are some of these websites talking about? Because I really couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I tell you, when I heard that yesterday, and I was at a function last night, and I was talking to someone close to the program, because I was trying to remember, you know, whether it was high school or college, I don't remember him ever being hurt, ever. You know, would he come out of a game because he landed on a shoulder or had a stinger? Yeah. I can mentally picture him right now coming off, you know, with an arm, you know, grimacing. But then two plays later, he'd be back out there. I mean, he's that type of kid. You know, I don't know if that was some pre-draft gamesmanship going on. Look, you never know. A guy could be 100% healthy and they start poking and prodding. They think something's a little bit looser than it should be. I don't know. But I don't know if there's anything out there in that realm that with the how good these folks are in training rooms and team surgeons that can't get fixed in an off season. Even catastrophic injuries doesn't seem to stop football players anymore. But I'm a one or nothing. I think that was a nothing burger, and I wouldn't be surprised if, like I said, if it wasn't some pre-draft gamesmanship to maybe someone hoping that they could steal him a little bit later.
Mike, as we say goodbye, first-round picks, right? I mean, there are expectations with a first-round pick. How do you think Brian Thomas will meet those expectations? Maybe they're not fair, but he now has the label of being a first-round pick. So, you got to produce in that realm, very similar to Malik Nabers, obviously, who was a top 10 pick out of LSU. How do you think Brian Thomas will meet those expectations as a pro?
I don't think he's going to have any issues. He's been at LSU. He's got the work ethic. He sees the former NFL LSU wide receivers come back. You know, we used to call LSU DBU. In reality, it's probably wide receiver U. Look at the wide receivers that have come out of LSU. It's absolutely insane. And they all work together in the offseason. He sees what the Justin Jeffersons and the Jamar Chases do in the offseason and what the time they put in. And they all do it together when they have the opportunity. So I think you're going to get a kid that's going to hit the ground running. And what an addition that is for the Jaguars.
Well, of course, Brian Thomas wasn't the only LSU player to be drafted by the Jaguars. They went to Baton Rouge three separate occasions. Again, Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, here with us on 1010XL. Mike, in round two, Mason Smith comes to Jacksonville with the 48th pick overall. Was an all-freshman player in 2021. Of course, he had the knee injury in 22, came back and I believe played an entire 12-game season last year. Your thoughts on Mason Smith being drafted by the Jaguars?
You know, in some ways he's a head-scratcher. In other ways, I'm also like, I wonder what's going to happen when he has steady coaching for a period of time. I could go either way on Mason. I will say it's 6'6". He's got a problem with pad level. That's probably nothing that hasn't been said already. I think the unfortunate thing for him in his LSU tenure is that he had a new defensive line coach every time he blinked. And every year he was there, he had a different defensive line coach. I don't think he received the type of development he needed while at LSU. But I do think he's going to need some time. Again, it's 6'6", 315 pounds. I was probably one of the people who, you know, probably had people scratching their head because he was the number one player in the state of Louisiana coming out of high school. I thought he was a for sure first round draft pick had he been an offensive lineman. But I think he's got a lot of ability. He's athletic. He's extremely intelligent. And again, I think that there is a good bit of untapped ceiling with him once he's got some coaching that he's going to be able to you know get a brighter future from.
Obviously, an ACL in his past, Mike. He was healthy last year, though. You think the knee injury is behind him?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's certainly good news for the Jaguars. I heard a crazy comparison with him, and I'm curious because you follow that LSU program as closely as anybody and have done so for years. I heard the name Albert Haynesworth, and the person that described Mason Smith as Albert Haynesworth to me said, when Mason Smith is on, he might be the most dominant player on the roster, but when Mason Smith is off, you might have – I mean, he didn't use the word head case, but that's kind of the direction he was going. What's your thought there?
Well, I think the problem for LSU is how woeful the defense has been for years. And, you know, I don't know how much better it's going to be this year. I thought last year, you know, there was a time in December where we thought Mason Smith and Mekhi Wingo were both going to come back. But I thought even then LSU needed to go on the portal and get a couple of transfer portal guys. And we're going to talk a little bit about him later, but I think Justin Jefferson was actually LSU's best performing defensive lineman last year.
Well, let's dive into him. The third player the Jaguars took from LSU, Mason Smith's partner there on the defensive line, Jordan Jefferson in round number four. From the sounds of that, Mike, you seem to have liked Jordan Jefferson there at Baton Rouge.
I did. And, you know, he's one of those guys that everybody was hoping had another year to come back because LSU is absolutely so thin there right now. And wanted Mason back as well. But, you know, finish off Mason real quick, I don't know, had he come back for another year, would he have been a first-round pick? I think a lot of people thought maybe Mason was going to get not get taken as early as he did in the second round. So it's probably a great decision for him. And Jefferson, I just thought he, at times last year, you know, what did he have, 90 tackles throughout his career, six sacks, and performed very well at the Senior Bowl. I just thought he was LSU's most effective guy when he was in the game. And certainly when Wingo got hurt later in the year, he played even better. So I think both those guys have a lot of upside. And I think Jacksonville got a couple of good ones, although, I want to see with Mason, you know, if they can get him to get lower. You know, he's just so tall. I'm going to be curious to see where they line him up and how they utilize him.
Mike, as we begin to wrap up, again, Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, out in Baton Rouge with us. The Jaguars take three LSU players in the draft. Someone described Mason Smith to me in the Haynesworth comparison as most dominant on some plays, and then you don't notice him for a quarter. Maybe the effort isn't there the entire game. The fact that Jefferson is coming with him, could that potentially help Mason Smith?
I don't know that helps him. I really think it's mainly for him. It's going to be getting coaching. I know there's a whole deal with Matt House wanting a Pete Jenkins disciple to coach him. And then that's when they brought in Jimmy Lindsay last year, who then had a medical situation in August. To me, a lot, you know, it seemed like there was times with Mason where his only real move was a bull rush. And he needs to develop, he needs to get further along technique wise and have a bigger repertoire of moves in order to get to the quarterback and apply pressure.
Finally, Mike, three LSU players coming to Jacksonville. That's only happened a handful of times where one NFL team drafts three college teammates from the same program. What's been the thought in Baton Rouge this past weekend about Brian Thomas, Mason Smith, and Jordan Jefferson all coming to Jacksonville?
Well, what happens is everybody gets upset here because the Saints never draft LSU players.
Yeah.
So, but you see Jacksonville take three, and there's been times where there's been an LSU player available to the Saints. And if I read off the list, it would be crazy that actually could have helped them. And to see Jacksonville take three, I think it has a lot of people excited. And so, and I suspect with the way the Saints are likely to perform this upcoming season, you're going to have a lot of Louisiana folks watching Jacksonville, just like they are watching the Cincinnati Bengals right now.
Well, and the crazy thing, too, we woke up this morning to find out Jarvis Landry is going to participate in Jaguar rookie minicamp at 31 years old. He's going to be 32 in November, hoping for an NFL comeback. So that Baton Rouge to Jacksonville pipeline is not only strong in the draft, but a guy like Landry as well.
I'll tell you this about Jarvis Landry. If he can get it done and he's right on the cusp of whether you hold on to him or take a guy who's maybe marginally better or just as good because they're younger, you might be better off with Jarvis Landry just because of what a great team leader he is.
Absolutely. We remember what he did in Cleveland, certainly. And look, a guy like Brian Thomas coming in, you could have a lot worse mentors than Jarvis Landry, if at least for the offseason as we lead into the 2024 campaign.
Yeah, he is like having a coach on the field.
Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. Mike, appreciate the time. We'll certainly do it again around college football season. And we'll see how Brian Thomas, Mason Smith, and Jordan Jefferson all do here their rookie years in Jacksonville. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
And thank you to Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, for joining us here on Hacker After Dark. Who knew that Jacksonville, Florida would become Baton Rouge, Louisiana East as the Jaguars drafted three LSU players, Brian Thomas at wide receiver in round one, big defensive lineman Mason Smith in round two, and even bigger defensive lineman Jordan Jefferson in round number four. Mike has covered LSU for years. No one really knows the Tigers any better. He's been out there for decades, and we certainly appreciate Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com for joining us here tonight to talk about those three former LSU Tigers that are all now Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy night, and it will be a very busy week here on Hacker After Dark. A ton of NFL draft reaction, obviously. NBA playoffs are in full swing. Major League Baseball is actually nearing the quarter pole, if you can believe that. So there's a ton to do, and we'll be with you every night here on Hacker After Dark. We have a lot of people to thank for this evening's broadcast. Again, Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com covering the LSU Tigers. Thank you to Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union for joining us tonight. Always appreciate Demetrius giving us time to break down the Jags, including his thoughts on the Jaguars draft this past weekend. And back in hour number one, Ryan Roberts, Rise in Draft, the letter N, riseindraft.com. Ryan's been one of our draft guys here on Hacker After Dark for many years, and we always appreciate his time. We will be back tomorrow night on a Tuesday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Monday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Monday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Tuesday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.